Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
The Word is a proud media partner of Latitude Festival 2012. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
And that's really that weird different thing, is that you can see the little curtains.
The curtains, and then above that is another circle. Yeah. Where the people that like tiny dots, the faces. But what happened last night, and what we do is when we did Rubber Bullets right at the end, like all the lights were on of the audience as well. And it's like suddenly we go, oh, amazing, you know. But then you feel even closer to people because you can actually see them. Whereas when it's dark, they kind of sort of fade away. But it's just, I mean, the atmosphere and the ambience and the ambient sound in there is amazing, particularly for acoustic things as well.
You could never imagine it would be.
It's got its own reverberation.
Because they've got those mushrooms on the ceiling.
But even with that, it's so vast that there's going to be some sort of ambience. Yeah. But it's a very nice ambience.
How peculiar, you never played it. I would have thought in all the time. By the way, we should introduce Graham Goomble. Sorry.
Direct from the Albert Hall.
Direct from the Albert Hall,
I did sleep.
Wasn't it your birthday last night?
It was.
Yeah. It was actually a
pure coincidence that when I saw that the Albert Hall had come in, that gig had come in on my birthday, it was like amazing. We had a great night. Really
good.
Terrific.
Good. It's fantastic to have you here. There's a traditional question that we tend to ask people, which is what music can you remember growing up as a child playing in your house?
Well, I think it was then the Home Service was on. I can remember hearing sort of Ted Heath, big band music.
Oh, yeah, that'd be the light programme.
Yeah, the light programme. So it was. That's really what it was. And I remember Workers' Playtime. There was Children's Favourites with Uncle Mac. And that was quite an influential programme because, I mean, lyrically, you got things like there was an old lady who swallowed a fly.
I don't know why she swallowed a fly, perhaps she'll die.
Which goes on and on like that, which has the greatest final line, which is I know an old lady who swallowed a horse. She's dead.
Dead, of course.
Of course.
Because the creature gets bigger and bigger, doesn't
bigger
it?
And
I
bigger.
Used to find it fantastic. And then,
it's so great. And records like Danny Kaye's records.
Which ones?
The Ugly Duckling.
Yeah, fantastic.
Sparky's Magic.
Sparky's Magic Piano.
So if you think about that now, they were sort of quite innovative, both in their lyrical content and also the production of the records was phenomenal.
A lot of them were comedy records or drama records.
That's
so they had to be, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
They were painting the picture with sound, weren't they?
And then Burl Ives, I remember Burl Ives.
That's where I heard that Swallowed a Fly song.
Yeah, that's right. He did it.
So, but you didn't have records in the house?
No, it was the radio. And when I was a young kid, I wanted to be a drummer. And I remember my mum had a handbag that had a kind of a sort of serrated surface to it, and I used to get the clothes brushes and be
clothes brush in your mother's handbag.
This is perfect. This is how it ought to be.
Yeah, mind it was a Ludwig handbag
from these small acorns.
Yes, Ludwig handbag.
So, what about when you first got an instrument?
Well, I wanted to be a drummer because I thought drummers were the coolest people in the world, which they still are. But it was not to be. And I was bought a guitar by my cousin, Ronnie, my poor Ronnie, he died too early. He bought me a guitar back from Spain. I think it cost him probably not even a fiver. And the action on it was so awful, it was really difficult to play. However, I fell in love with it. And, that really was one of the major things that happened in my life. That and a combination of what was played on the radio with things like, it was skiffle. So it was homemade music. It was the first time that, you know, you as a non-professional...
Which also had an amazing sound, didn't it? You know, I really take your point about those comedy records, because if you listen to things like Right Said Fred, produced by, I think, George Martin, wasn't it?
It was produced by George Martin.
As a very small child, the sound of, you know, piano legs being broken off and boards being...
Footsteps coming upstairs.
And rubble falling from the ceiling. You know, it was so thrilling. Also, those stories, those songs rather told a story.
That's right.
And a lot of the songs that you wrote in the very early days, and a lot of the songs that groups were playing in 1963, weren't necessarily about themselves, were they?
They were kind of fantasies. Or, I mean, some things were based on what a real life experience, but you kind of, you don't want to tell the whole story somehow. You know, you twist it around a bit.
So what was the first song you wrote? Can you remember?
I wrote a song called, it was a terrible song called That's How It's Gonna, That's How It's Gonna Stay, Not Going To Stay.
Can you sing the first couple of
Let
lines?
Let me tell you about this love of mine. I've been loving her for a long, long time. I've been loving her for a long, long time. That's how it's going to stay.
Yes.
Nice. And then, that's a hit. That, people, we got ourselves a number one here. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that was the first one. And then I guess really when I started listening to music seriously, there were people like the Animals being played, and the House of the Rising Sun had a massive effect on me, because if you know, there's like a chord sequence, like C, A minor, F, G, which is a sort of kind of dum ba 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 dum ba, which to me was very sort of white and almost sort of bubblegummy, like very sweet.
Yes.
Whereas the House of the Rising Sun, actually, the chords are, well, the first two chords are actually the opposites. It goes from the minor to the relative major as opposed to the major to the relative minor. Are you getting this?
No,
I'm getting this completely.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, and this was much more interesting to me.
It's in three times as well,
isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
And this was much more interesting to me. Plus, I'd always been attracted to minor keys and minor chords. I found them much more expressive. And so, For Your Love, which was the first song that I wrote that became a hit, the first two chords are this sort of minor to the relative major.
Yes.
And I was sort of inspired by the Animals record.
Didn't you? Now, am I right? You were in a group that played, I think, Warm Up on Top of the Pops or something, and your group was there the day the Yardbirds performed For Your Love.
Yeah, that's right. It was the Mockingbirds.
That must have been a very extraordinary... You were in the Mockingbirds. Extraordinary thing to see this hit group playing your song, and you are unknown,
I know. It was weird. Well, it was very strange. Top of the Pops came from Dickinson Road in Manchester originally.
Was it a church hall or something?
Yeah, it was.
Those were the very first broadcasts,
yes,
weren't they?
Yeah. So what year are we talking about for background?
We're talking 64, was it? 65.
65.
Okay, 65.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I think they had various bands in to keep the, you know, as you say, a warm-up before the actual show started. And there I was with...
to get the miniskirt girls dancing.
That's right. That was our job.
Yeah.
And it was a nice job, actually. And so I was in a band with Kevin, the Mockingbirds.
Kevin Godley,
yeah. And actually, we'd recorded For Your Love, and it had been rejected, and that's how it eventually got to the Yardbirds. But there I was, you know, in the warm-up band, and then the Yardbirds are coming on singing my song. It was fantastic.
I was listening to that song again yesterday, that record, the Yardbirds record. You can almost take it as a sort of precursor of prog rock by a few years. It's kind of unusual, isn't it?
Unusual, all right. I mean, the idea of it actually stopping in the middle and going into some sort of different rhythm is, I think, was quite original.
Was that something you did in the original thing, or was that something the Yardbirds?
No, we did it.
Right.
I mean, the only similarities... The stroke of genius was the harpsichord, I think. But on our demo, there was an acoustic guitar, so that kind of have a sort of similar sound to the harpsichord, but obviously not as good. But we did have the bongos.
Right, right. But the harpsichord is what makes it sound sort of otherworldly and a bit strange, doesn't it?
Brian Auger played that.
Oh really?
Yeah.
How amazing!
Yeah, yeah. It's such a simple effective part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Incredibly right. atmospheric. Yeah.
So that was your first. That was your first hit. So you, yeah. you're still based in Manchester.
Yeah, I'm still living in Manchester.
What
yeah.
about just quickly the groups? The, you were in a variety of groups.
Oh, loads
the
of groups.
Cravettes, the Planets, the Whirlwinds, the High Spots. Was there, just and I love that period, which has now sort of become a kind of part of a kind of Spinal Tap folklore of what the kind of early '60s was like. But yeah. it, what was that like to be part of that?
But it was brilliant. I mean, all we wanted to do was just to play music. And, like, the boys that I was friendly with and in bands with, I mean, on a Saturday night, we'd go to clubs to see bands. That was it. And, I mean, a lot of the clubs didn't have a licence, so we didn't go to sort of meet girls or go and have a drink. It was to see the band. That was it. And position yourself and what's that amp? And look at those drums. And what's yeah. that? And what's that guitar he's got? And what's this? And what's that? And, you know, that was all we
But also,
lived for.
Obviously, real amount of scrutiny of what people were playing. Because the Absolutely impression I scrutiny. Got was, you know, I was really young and I can remember my older sisters playing all this stuff, you know, and you felt that the times were changing so rapidly.
Yeah.
You know, someone would have a hit and immediately be a great kind of rush of movement in the direction of that hit record to try yeah. and capture whatever it is that these people were
yeah.
had synthesized, you know. Yeah. So and I mean, you wrote some hits for the Hollies at that yeah. stage too. So
yeah.
how did that come about? Things like Bus Stop, well, you know, was that something you just felt in the wind that this was the kind of music people wanted, or was it based on something you'd already heard? Or?
I was from the age of, well, I started tried to play the drums at seven, but so I got very aware of music from being seven. Then I was bought my first guitar at 11. So I'm living in an age of like skiffle, Lonnie Donegan. People like Lonnie Donegan were really an inspiration. Then there was Cliff and the Shadows. The Shadows, mega.
Absolutely huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the Beatles. Well, like, just think about these people, how important they were to British music.
Big, but no Shadows.
You'll never be the Shadows.
No,
boys.
Lonnie.
Yeah.
Funny, we had the Blockheads in yesterday talking just about Lonnie Donegan as yeah, well. I yeah, couldn't agree
more. Very important. Yeah. Very important. So I always feel incredibly lucky to have been at the age I was at that particular time, in my sort of formative years, and I was absorbing everything, always completely obsessed with music, and I still am. And I was lucky in that I was terrible at school. I wasn't interested in anything academic. So my parents realised that and encouraged me with music. It wasn't like my, you know, contemporaries were going off to university or becoming yeah. solicitors or whatever, they were studying law or whatever, but they knew that was not going to happen for me.
But there's a fascinating period in about, I must have been about, I don't know, maybe 64, where pop music seems to undergo this extraordinary change, you know, that most of the music has been, if this isn't a generalisation, is what I was saying before, it's observations, you know. Bus Stop is about looking at suburban life, isn't it, you know, looking through windows, people looking out of windows in the street, and it's not about the author of the song. And yet,
that's
somehow,
right.
a change happens. Songs used to be, she was just 17, if you know what I mean, and then they become, you know, it happened once before, you know, I came to your door, no reply. You know, and it's a song about me.
Yeah.
And I don't really know what caused that.
I don't know.
Always say, oh, well, Bob Dylan told us to, John Lennon was told to write about himself. But, I mean, that's obviously a generalisation.
Well, yeah, people say that if you use I rather than they, or, you know, it makes it, people maybe identify with it more themselves and are more sympathetic towards it and kind of feel more in it. I don't know. I don't actually analyse things so much. I just do. So I don't think.
We are terrible old rock critics, really. You see, another thing must be that also that people realise that the people singing the songs in 64, 65 were normally the people who wrote them, whereas before that they weren't necessarily. And
that's
so suddenly
right.
think, well, that was a real interest in this person. Yeah. I want to know about them.
Right, because it's them writing. The guy that's singing actually wrote the song. That makes a hell of a difference.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, there's three in a row that you wrote. I was it just struck me when I was looking at this yesterday. You wrote Bus Stop for all the Hollies.
Yeah.
You wrote No Milk Today for Herman's Hermits. Yeah. And you wrote Tallyman for Jeff Beck. Now, that's a bit later, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they're all kind of set in a, you know, the notion of milk, bus stops, Tallyman. Tallyman were people that came around and took your hire purchase payments, weren't they?
Well, the common denominator of those songs, more so No Milk Today and Tallyman, is my father. really? My dad used to help me with lyrics and came up with song titles as well. I mean, he used to say to me, art for art's sake, money for God's sake.
Did he want, really? Did he want a percentage for
that? I did look after him.
Yeah. Seriously, he was the kind of person who just came up with names.
I'll tell you about my dad. He was, well, he should have been a professional writer, but he didn't have a patron. We came from a working class family. For him to go out on a limb like that would have been, it just wasn't in his character. But he wrote poetry, he wrote stories, he did very well in amateur dramatics. But when I say amateur, they were professional productions and his writing was professional. So although, and a lot of his contemporaries were writing for Coronation Street. And I tried to push him to do that because he would have been brilliant at it. But he just, generally he wanted to write about things that had a Jewish interest. Right. That was his thing. But when I started writing and coming, and he would go, yeah, well, you know, that you can make that better, or that's, he used to call himself the mechanic, like I'd bring the song that was sort of slightly rusting and not running very properly.
Well, there are people who make a living out of doing that, don't they?
Well, how incredible. Well, yeah. It couldn't be more supportive.
What did you do for a living?
Well, he worked in the schmatter business,
right?
Like the rag trade,
right?
And but it wasn't him at all. Right. And whenever people say, "What did he do?" I say he was a writer.
Really? So he was the person who came up with the idea: no milk today.
What happened? He went to see a friend of his who was out, and as he turned on the doorstep, he noticed the bottle with the note in it. And came up with this fantastic idea about why was it no milk today? Well, think about it, you know.
Brilliant.
My baby's gone away.
The bottle's... It was poetry. I mean, this was his line. The bottle stands for lawn, a symbol of the dawn. It was just amazing.
So he wrote that?
Yeah, he wrote it.
Really?
And I found that when I sat down, if he'd written something, it immediately suggested a melody.
Really? Right.
That's exactly.
He must have been thrilled to see you, to see his son take his little bits and pieces and make something.
And I was thrilled for him that, in a funny sort of way, he'd got successful through me. Although he didn't do it, he should have been successful in his own right, literally in his own right. But he wasn't. But his work is fantastic. And actually, after he died, between my mum and there's an authoress who's recently passed away, Maisie Mosco, who had a couple of very big books out in the 60s and 70s. Between the three of us, we put together a collection of his works because I wanted something tangible to give to people, I can talk about, you know, it's like talking about a song. Or about food, who cares? Let's listen to it and then you'll know.
It's just such a lovely idea. I like to think of him sort of watching something on Top of the Pops and nudging his mate at the bar in the pub. Going, I wrote those lines.
Yeah. I'll help myself.
You've been listening to the free feed of The Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.